We have a great subscription offer for all our listeners. Subscribe to our digital edition for 12 months for just $24.99. That's 6 issues of our award-winning magazine delivered to your inbox for less than $4.20 an issue. Only $24.99 for a full year. So don't wait. To subscribe, go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia. That's australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia.
Hi, I'm Angela Heathcote and this is Talking Australia, a podcast by Australian Geographic. This episode, I'm talking to eagle expert Simon Cherryman. Simon has spent most of his life studying Australia's largest raptor, the iconic wedge-tailed eagle. Persecuted until the 1970s, wedge-tailed eagles once had a bounty on their carcasses, and some of the resentment of these birds has persisted today. Simon uses his intimate knowledge of our wedgies to change people's perceptions and raise awareness about their conservation. Simon, can you tell me where your love of wedge-tailed eagles sort of began?
That's a great question. I think there's a couple of moments. One that's very poignant is when I was about 7 years old, I was on a family holiday down south, and there's a range, the Porongarup Range, that my mum and dad and I used to go to on holidays. And my dad had climbed up this enormous granite dome, which is called Marmabup Rock. The white fella name is Devil's Slide. And dad had spent some time up there, and I was a bit small, so I kind of hung out with mum near the base, and dad came down with this incredibly captivating story about spending time up there and laying on the rock because he got cold with the wind, and this pair of eagles came and soared and came so close to him. And I can just really remember my dad being so enthusiastic about portraying his experience up on this amazing mountain. So I distinctly remember that, but then they were always moments on family holidays and at home where I can remember looking up and seeing wedge-tailed eagles, you know, above the house or and just on the thermals, and being a kid that loved birds and being sort of obsessed with and having all these flying dreams, they were sort of the most amazing creatures to be right up in the air soaring so effortlessly.
And then how did you kind of get into the conservation side of things as well?
Well, that is probably down to my path through university. So I was always into birds through high school. I didn't actually know what I was going to try and do for a career, and was very much in that mindset of, you know, what are you going to do when you grow up and pick a job? So I didn't actually know that you could really work in conservation. But I did environmental science at university, which sort of just happened. I selected a couple of other things and then I just got offered that course. So then spending time at uni studying science and conservation, I suppose that shaped my path very strongly from then.
And you established Insight Ornithology back in 2008. Can you sort of tell me about how that came about?
Yeah, so I started working just before I left uni. I started working with some environmental consultants, so I needed to get my own ABN to work for them as a subcontractor. I had no ambitions whatsoever of starting a business, and I still don't really feel like I have a business because it's really just me. But that's where it began. And then I suppose I just started branching out. So rather than just subcontracting to other people, I realised I could do other things to do with birds as well as bird surveys. I was, you know, starting to build nesting boxes for friends and neighbours because I was doing that from a young age as a kid, but you know, boxes for parrots, not for obviously for eagles. And concurrently with that, I then went back to university part-time and was doing my honours on wedge-tailed eagle diet. And at the same time I was doing dietary studies, there was a lot of research that was happening with the Department of Environment and Conservation at the time to do with eagles and their potential impacts on a lot of the marsupials that they were trying to trying to grow populations of and translocate. And the pesky wedgies were, you know, sometimes implicated in carrying off little marsupials with the transmitter. So they wanted to know more about eagles and their diet concurrently. So I started sort of working a little bit on and off while I was studying as well. And it just kind of grew from there, really. I still don't really feel like I run a business or even have a job sometimes there, but it's very busy.
And I have to say, your images of wedge-tailed eagles are just amazing, like truly amazing. I mean, what are some of the precautions you have to take in getting so up close with wedge-tailed eagles? And like, what are some of the precautions that you take?
Well, I suppose off the first thing to say is, you know, because I climb nests, that it's often, especially these days in a bird photography community, sometimes met with not with enthusiasm, because, you know, there's a thing of, are you disturbing them? So I have spent a lot of time finding eagles and looking at their nests from a distance, and it's much more recently that I've, with licenses to do this research by putting, you know, bands on birds, that I'm actually getting right close to them. But so the precautions, you know, are first and foremost, I think, make sure that, you know, you follow the right steps from a research protocol, that you have the right licenses and stuff. But then that aside, it's obviously dangerous being up in the trees, or it can be. Some of the nests that are 30 or 40 metres up in the canopy, I've always got ropes on, you know, harnesses and safety gear. But then the other comment that I get frequently is about the eagles and their, you know, their defence of the nest. And they are contrary to what you would believe. Most people think that, you know, the bigger the bird, the more fierce they might be in protecting their young. But wedgies are not like that at all. Most long-lived raptors are scared of people. There's a few exceptions, but they watch you from a distance. They know that if their nest fails, if you're a predator, and you cause a nesting failure, they will likely get the chance to breed again. So it sounds a bit sort of terrible from a human perspective, but it's not worth it's not worth risking your life to attack that crazy human in the tree and possibly cause an injury that could cause your could cost your life. It's far better off to wait and have another nesting event in the future. So the biggest precaution really then is handling nestlings, which have talons like their parents, except they haven't really worn them down by killing anything or landing on too many branches. So if you catch one, when you catch one of the eaglets, if it's quite a mature bird, you have to be really focused on making sure you grab hold of their legs above the feet, and then securing the bird very firmly so that it doesn't latch onto you. And if it does, it hurts, I can tell you.
I do have to say, your pictures of eaglets are the cutest thing I've ever seen. If you haven't seen a picture of a wedge-tailed wedge-tailed eaglet, you have to go and look it up, because it's literally like an actual snowball, like a little fluff ball. It's so, so adorable, and totally not what you expect a wedge-tailed eagle to look like as a baby.
Yeah, that they are absolutely gorgeous. I'm completely with you, Ange. They have this cuteness about them, which is part of the fascination for me. And no matter how many I've seen, sometimes you see them when they're in their first week of life, and then that transformation that they make from those first days of their life, when they are literally a tiny, vulnerable white fluff ball that would fit into your hand like a little chicken, to think that same little being becomes this, you know, in just 3 months, it becomes a thing that stands nearly a meter tall in front of you with talons that it could put through your hand.
Crazy.
It's incredible.
And because you do spend so much time around these birds, and you get this kind of, you have this sort of intimate insight into them, what can you tell us about them?
There's so many things to learn. I'm every time I answer my own questions and broader research questions, I'm finding more questions that are things I don't know. But I think the thing to say from an intimate perspective is that they are highly intelligent creatures. Most birds are, and most birds are, you know, there's those old sayings like bird brain and things that imply that birds are not particularly smart. But these, you know, wedge tails are highly intelligent creatures. They're long-lived. They're incredibly intimate, so their partnerships, they are monogamous and they form these long-lasting pairs. If something happens to one of the pairs, which it sometimes does, the mate will find a new partner, and often that's a younger bird that's looking for a breeding territory. And when you watch birds over years and years, and you get to know individuals, and then you see ones pass on and other ones come in, you realise how much time it takes, just like people, to establish a relationship, become a good working partnership, understand each other, and how important that sort of that bond is, that, you know, eagles work together to reproduce successfully and rear their young. And one thing I'm absolutely fascinated by is when you study a long established pair, I always say that they're like, it's like one brain is operating two birds. For example, a nest I was observing years ago now had a female incubating eggs on it, and through the scope from a distance I could see her sitting, and for whatever reason she needed to leave the nest, so she just suddenly got up and flew, and immediately within about 20 seconds, you know, there was this swooping figure and the male swooped in and landed and sat on her eggs, and he just knew, you know, he's there watching, ready to back up his partner. And the moment he's needed, he's in there, you know, to help out. Mm. I suppose that's the overall thing I would say, that they're probably more amazing than just that set of wings.
Smart and very good partners.
Smart, very good partners, absolutely. lots of things we can learn from.
And one of your biggest projects has been tracking wedge-tailed eagles. Can you tell me about that and why that is so important?
Yeah, so I was very inspired by research conducted in the 60s and 70s, and that was the first time that people really started to look at eagle movements. But the only available technology was really to put a metal bracelet on young birds and hope that they turned up somewhere and we could calculate the distance that they'd move between those two points. But other than that research, there was this big question about what young birds do and where they go in between the time when they leave their parents' territory and they become independent and when they settle in their own territory. And so that's this big sort of void. You know, they'd go out into the ether and who knows where they went. So I was very passionate about trying to answer some of those questions. And obviously starting my research, my PhD, in a time when technology has moved forward enormously allows, you know, us now to put these little transmitting devices on them and literally follow their story. So there were two components to the tracking research. One which I haven't really continued on with as much is to do with the adults and their home range size and what they do in their day-to-day life. So my initial pilot study, pardon the pun, was to put transmitters on a couple of adults just to see how that worked. And so I've got some data from that. But then I've spent most time after that in 2013 putting transmitters on 22 juvenile birds when they're large enough to have a backpack harness put on, when they're still in the nest. And what we then get is the first, you know, weeks and months of their movements after they leave the nest, but when they're still with mum and dad. And then most raptors commence a part of their life which we call juvenile dispersal. And so that's when they're independent. It's like, you know, people in Australia go, right, I'm 21, I'm going to go on a Kentucky tour to Europe or something. And so they just go out there into the wilderness. But what's been remarkable about studying that is the huge distances they travel in such an incredibly short space of time. So we've had birds born and raised in the Perth Hills here where I grew up. You know, the day that they're independent, they haven't moved more than 5 or 6 kilometres from their nest. And the day they're independent, they could be 60 kilometres away. And then the next day they can do another 200 and they can move huge distances out to, you know, to Alice Springs, to Darwin, to the Kimberley. It's amazing to see them travelling like that.
Subscribe to our AG magazine for 6 months for just $30 and save 33% on the newsstand price. That's 3 issues of our award-winning magazine delivered to your home for just $30. So don't wait. Go to www.australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia for our special offer. That's www.australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia.
I want to talk about some of the misconceptions around wedge-tailed eagles and some of the impacts of those misconceptions. They are a really big bird, and as you well know, there are some of those really dangerous misconceptions about them with regard to, you know, what they eat and how they act around humans and stuff like that. I'm hoping that you can maybe go through that and some of the misconceptions that you've come across in your career.
Yeah, sure. So the sort of hardest one in terms of flying and stuff is they obviously interact with a whole range of other aircraft. Humans are increasingly invading their airspace with drones, with, you know, gliders and light aircraft. And most raptors are very territorial in their airspace because their territory in the air represents what they have on the ground to keep them alive. So there are records of them attacking various aircraft. I think the misconception often, and this is the same with regard to livestock, is that, you know, the eagle has some intent to do something that is trying to mess up what people are trying to do, and they have no, you know, way to predict anything. They can only really respond to what they're seeing at the time. So an eagle is attacking an aircraft usually because it feels threatened and it feels like it's something's invading its livelihood. Which we can, you know, we can all relate to. But with regard to the livestock industry, you know, wedgies were persecuted for a century or more. Hundreds of thousands of them were shot, and government departments paid bounties on hundreds of thousands of birds all over the country. And I suppose the misconception from my perspective is that, you know, eagles do eat animals. They eat mammals especially because if you catch a mammal, you get a lot more bang for your buck, a lot of meat to feed yourself over days. And, you know, but the misconception is that they have an impact on the sheep industry. People might lose lambs. They might lose half-grown sheep to a number of birds that might be attacking them. But the cases where those things are happening are far worse, where the landscape has been stripped of all of its other biodiversity. So, you know, again, the eagles aren't trying to send anyone broke or attack the lambs over and above anything else, or attack other livestock, chickens or whatever animals that people have placed economic value on. They're just hunting to live like everything else. And their habitat has been enormously changed by the actions of Europeans in the last two centuries or more. So what we've seen is this huge wave of biodiversity lost across the Australian continent. It's been replaced with, you know, with sheep, with cows, with other livestock. And from the eagle's perspective, if their ecosystem is so simplified that there's nothing much to eat, they're going to just respond to trying to prey on what they can. So we're hearing more. David Attenborough is publicising now more than ever that biodiversity, this assortment of plants and animals in the ecosystems that we live in, is an integral part of our planet. And the more we nurture in agricultural areas the biodiversity of those places by trying to replant vegetation and encourage native animals to coexist with our land practices, the more balance there will be in terms of predators and their potential impacts.
And there is that thing about how, you know, farmers might come out and see, you know, a wedge-tailed eagle feeding on a dead sheep or something like that, but it's quite unlikely that the eagle itself killed the sheep.
Yeah, it can be. So it depends on the circumstances, really. Often the eagle is blamed, you know, for killing something that it hasn't. They absolutely are the vultures of Australia, so they will scavenge on carcasses. The research that was done extensively in the 60s and 70s showed that wedgies were responsible for an absolutely negligible amount of lamb deaths. But, you know, it is plausible that they can hunt mammals because that's what they've evolved doing. But I suppose what I find frustrating from a conservation perspective is it's sort of like a very childish debate. You know, he did that and that was mine and she shouldn't have taken that off of me. You know, humans are far more evolved and are capable of resolving these issues with more sensible, mature approaches, I think. And so to blame the eagles for doing something that they've evolved doing naturally, when really it's a result of the way humans have treated country, there are other solutions. I think it's tough. We're all trying to do the best we can with you know, becoming better custodians of the landscape, but the attitude, which is very still rife across Australia, that, you know, we own all these parts of country and we should be controlling the ecosystems. As soon as you change your mindset and you start thinking from the other perspective, like from the land's perspective, that, you know, it's sick and it's lost all these parts, it's just like having a mate, you know, saying, I've pinched your car for the afternoon and you're annoyed because he didn't ask permission. But then later you hear his perspective and he might say, oh, well, look, you know, my mum was sick and I didn't have time and my phone was broken and all of these things happened, so I just had to do it. I'm really sorry. And immediately, as soon as you understand the other side of the story, you start having more ability to be sympathetic.
Mm, I remember actually interviewing you in 2018 about when a rural Victorian farmer had killed something like 600 wedge-tailed eagles through poisoning because for livestock reasons or livestock protection, I think something like that. And you had this really iconic quote, which I always go back to, and it's basically just, we simply can't clear all of the land, kill the kangaroos and rabbits and expect these majestic eagles to just eat dust. I'm wondering, how did you feel when you saw that news story come out, and how do people like you work to change those perceptions, or are those perceptions by farmers changing?
Yeah, I feel that they are changing, Ange. I feel like there's definitely a gradual change, and certainly that story that came out of Victoria, you know, there was a huge amount of media coverage about that issue, rightly so. And listening into all the public calls and stuff, I definitely felt that there was probably a growing number of people that were sympathetic to the eagles. People of our generation that, you know, that often, you know, weren't necessarily exposed to how amazing eagles are. More younger people have travelled around Australia and seen them on the roads, feeding on carrion and seen them soaring. So I'm positive about that. I think the attitude slowly changed. I think what's clear in the way humanity works is when you grow up in a certain environment with certain circumstances and your family and your elders are influencing your opinions and your values, it's logical then that we might get generations of partialists with no sympathy to the land, growing up still having those older attitudes that, you know, eagles are trying to kill our sheep, they're trying to stop what we're doing to make a business and to grow food for people, and therefore we should shoot them. Those attitudes will still be there, but the more they're diluted with the mindset that I've just talked about, and one of sympathy and an understanding that the landscape, it's your body on the outside, it's made of all these different parts, and you can't smash your body and take all the components out of it and expect it to keep working without nurturing all of the components together. And the landscape's biodiversity is exactly like that. So as you say, you can't strip all of these things off of the landscape that actually feed eagles and give them alternative sources of prey, and then still expect them to be there feeding on, you know, stuff other than the animals we place economic value on. So that's really what it comes down to. Any wildlife, human wildlife conflict, it comes down to ecologists trying to communicate to the public the way that these ecosystems work and the value and the roles that these animals play. And I suppose the way I've tried to approach that is, and sometimes by the scientific community, I've been actually really criticised because I haven't put all my energy into publishing a journal paper that maybe no one will ever read. I've put my life, my energy into this kind of thing where I'm doing public talks. I've done a little bit of research. I haven't written it up, but I've got so much enthusiasm that I want to spread to the community about the importance of wildlife and things like eagles. And that's what science is gradually spreading towards doing, getting the scientists that are doing the research, taking it straight to the public and saying, hey, look at this stuff. It's amazing. We need to look after it. You then have the potential to change attitudes from then on.
Tell me a little bit about the responsibility you feel having such an intimate knowledge of wedge-tailed eagles.
Yeah, so I think it's so important to communicate the information and the understanding you have of any creature, really. I didn't necessarily choose to research eagles from day dot. I just grew up with more of a fascination with them as I was growing older. But what I say now, which is really important to do with their position in the ecosystems of Australia, is that they are an apex predator and they are what some people don't like that term, but an umbrella species. So by communicating my passion and my information about how important eagles are and how amazing they are, lots of different things fit under the umbrella of a wedge-tailed eagle's wingspan, if you like, of their ecosystem. So if you set out to look at eagles and to study them and to conserve them, you immediately have to conserve big parts of habitat that they need, understand all the different components like their nest trees and the range of animals that they feed on. And so it's sort of a different way of thinking about the landscape. They're one species, but they're a window into an ecosystem that's composed of many. And so I suppose I feel that responsibility to say how important the environment is. But you can't do endless talks about every single component of an ecosystem, especially here in Southwest WA, where there's, you know, thousands of different species. But by talking just about one species, I feel like it helps communicate the message of conservation for many species.
Last question. I previously mentioned, that situation with the Victorian farmer poisoning all those wedge-tailed eagles. I'm wondering, I mean, what impacts do events like that have on wedge-tailed eagle populations? And, I mean, in terms of a conservation status, like, where are wedge-tailed eagles at and should we be concerned?
Yeah, so it was an absolutely devastating story, you know, hundreds of birds that were poisoned in a very short space of time. Unfortunately, though, it wasn't unusual in the context of the last century, and hundreds or thousands of eagles have actually been exterminated over many years prior to that. So in Western Australia, for about 40 years, from 1938, there was an average of about 2,000 bounties paid on eagles annually.
Oh my God.
So those numbers, so tens of thousands of birds that were removed, you think, how can it possibly be sustainable from the eagles population? But the research and the ongoing sort of data collection that we've done, you know, BirdLife and CSIRO has done over the last century or so, has really shown that the eagle population is enormous in Australia. There are probably thousands or maybe tens of thousands of birds out there that are breeding, that are reproducing annually. And so essentially those big slaughter events that humans have been responsible for are cropping the eagle population. They're taking out a lot of these juvenile birds, these birds in their first year, in their second year. Those birds actually aren't going to mature for another 5 or 6 years to become contributors to the breeding population themselves. And we're really killing big crops that are being attracted to parts of the landscape where there's maybe a lot of food. But as long as a few survive, as long as one or two eagles survive in 20 years to replace their parents, then we have population stability. And so Australia's size really, I think, has been the wedge-tailed eagle's friend despite all of this persecution. Other large raptors, other large eagles, you know, the golden eagle in Britain, in England, the white-tailed seagull in Scotland, they've been persecuted in similar ways. But because those places are so small, it only takes a few decades. You're killing all the juveniles. Soon the adults start dying of old age and there's no one to replace them. Australia's always had this vastness to it, these amazing desert areas that, you know, humans or Western humans anyway have viewed as inhospitable, but wedgies can go out there and find refuge and survive. And that's why they're still common and abundant today, thankfully.
I think it's interesting that you brought up those other raptor species, because I remember seeing images of bald eagles just like rummaging in rubbish because like their food sources have basically been so badly depleted and land clearing and stuff like that in the US. And it's really sad seeing such proud birds in those situations. And I think that's why those images of wedge-tailed eagles also hit a lot of people hard, because, yeah, they're just very proud animals, like very large, proud animals.
They absolutely are. They're incredible. And, you know, to think of putting, you know, clearly people that put baits out and poison carcasses to kill with wanton destruction majestic creatures like that have never had the exposure to their life cycle and to, you know, their amazing components, being amazing components of the landscape. That it's just a coldness that, you know, the parts of me that deeply care about these birds and other parts of the landscape, they were never built into the Lego set of those individual humans that can do that. And that's a shame. That's why, you know, we've got to involve younger generations more in research and in first-hand contact. And that's why, you know, all the images I try and take and spread, my aim is to try and encourage that attitude to spread more and get people to understand the landscape. And, you know, we can't just kill stuff. Like I've said, if you, you know, if you don't tear off your skin so you don't get sunburnt, you know, your skin is an important organ in your body. So you can't strip something, you can't tear all the trees off the landscape so that you don't have a bushfire, because they are performing an important role. And if we think about eagles and if we think about other parts of the landscape like that, then we're doing what the first Australians did, you know, have done for tens of thousands of years. Country comes first and we've got to fit into it. So that's where we've got to be thinking.
Well, thank you so much for talking wedgies with me today, Simon. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ange. No problems at all. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been great to chat.
That's it for today's episode of Talking Australia. If you have questions or comments, feel free to reach out. Write us an email, podcast@australiangeographic.com, or find us on Instagram @AustralianGeographic. And if you go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia, you'll find a special subscription offer for our listeners. So don't wait and go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia.